From a workout, remember your teachings well. Thank you very much. I still remember it well.
Good, good. Glad to hear it, brother. Give us one of your wins for this week, then. How's things been? How's things with Coach Gavin?
Yeah, very good. My t-shirts and trousers feel tighter, so something's working. So
Yeah, something's working. Anybody else want to share any wins today? I know, and I could ask you, Andrew, for some client wins, but anybody else want to share before I move to Andrew? How's everybody getting on? Go on, Matt. I know you're desperate to speak, and we've been speaking about your wins today. So go on, share a win with us, please.
Let's see. Been crushing it at the gym, staying on point with my diet. Travel's been hectic, but I still managed to keep my stuff together. Got getting ready to go to Costa Rica for 10 days. And yeah, kind of moving forward with my life. I got my ex-wife or ex-fiance moved out this past week. So that was, I wouldn't say it was fun, but it's cathartic.
I think we said today, wasn't it? It was kind of understanding, and this is a message for us all. I think that controlling what's in our control is super important in this process. So, kind of, there's going to be times and moments where there's uncertainty and there's non-consistency around other areas in our life, but making sure that we can control certain aspects and areas that we're in control of, which is typically kind of our food. Getting to the gym and being kind of intentional with our action around these things, kind of one will keep our mind healthy, but most importantly, keep us ticking certain boxes. So I talk to a lot of my guys about momentum and the importance of momentum. And sometimes, some weeks, some days, it's slower than others, but trying to keep the cart moving essentially, no matter how slow, is super important. So, yeah, well done, Matt. You're killing it at the moment. So, is there anybody else that wants to share any wins before we move into the slides for today? No? You're all ready to go? Cool. Well, can I ask a favor, Andrew? When I load up my slides, I'm not going to be able to see the chat box. So if there is any questions that pop up or anybody asks anything, just interrupt me, mate, and just kind of let me know kind of what the questions are and I'll get them answered. And it's important with today, guys, kind of, it's a little bit of a different topic to what's been on the agenda recently, but kind of hopefully it ties nicely into everything that, because I'm hopefully going to be doing these calls a little bit more regularly and I'm going to be talking more about anatomy and those sort of things and the integration of anatomy. So, kind of, if there is any questions and anything pops to mind, or you have got any questions that are not directly related to the content that I'm teaching today, then please do kind of put them in the chat box, ask me, and kind of I'll do my best to get them answered. And alternatively, if there's anything at the end of a short presentation, then I'll make sure that I get those answered. So again, save them to the end if you want to. So I'm going to move into my slides now, guys. And what we're going to start with today is anatomy integration. Okay, so what I want to talk a little bit about is a couple of different things. If I stop staring this for a second. Yeah, so I want to talk through a few different things in regards to anatomy today. So I'm not going to talk through the specifics of anatomy and physiology in regards to origin insertions, but what I'm going to talk about is its relationship and the muscle's relationship in regards to things like posture and making sure that we stay healthy, essentially. So a lot of us here are here for longevity reasons, okay, as well as building muscles. So I'm going to talk a little bit about sling systems and essentially kind of how we can integrate and understand sling systems a little bit better in relationship to the exercise that you guys are all doing. So you're all on programs. So hopefully today, the role of today is essentially to give you a better understanding of how your body moves and how it stable itself and give you some considerations for potential limitations and also a look into sling systems and kind of your understanding around certain, not all, but certain fascial lines and how they can help understand if any of you are suffering from any injuries, any tweaks, any tightness, which knowing through my clients through Muscle Intelligence up to this point, everybody has some sort of tightness, whether it's situational tightness from being stuck behind a desk all day to kind of old injuries, old traumas, and those sort of things. So understanding how the body moves is a goal of today. So there should be A lot of takeaways, and alternatively, if I do move too fast, because as you will guys will hear, I'm from the UK, so typically I do talk very fast. If there anything that I isn't made clear, then please just give me a shout. So I'm just to start with today, I'm going to clarify some terminology that you guys will have heard from your coach up to this point. If not, then, and if it's all new, then great. Okay, but I'm just going to give you a few terminologies that you might hear me mention today, and I just want to make sure that you understand what they are in regards to when I do mention them. So with all of these words, it's important to not have a direct association with all these words. So what we ideally will do with all these words, we want to make sure we get the correct context. So everything you'll hear me talk about is very contextual. There's nothing black and white, and I don't like to teach anything and everybody to take away as gospel, because there is context behind everything that we teach, and understanding you all as individuals, it's going to apply differently to each individual person. In regards to things that you'll hear, stuff like stiffness. So what I wanted to say at the start of this is stiffness is required. So we always think that kind of tightness and feeling stiff is an inherently bad thing. But sometimes tightness can be an expression or a signal from our nervous system to that essentially kind of we're reaching the end range. So for example, when we're hitting the end range of an exercise or taking a muscle to its relative shortest position, it will feel tight. So I think just understanding that stiffness and tightness contextually is not always inherently a bad thing, and can be used to our advantage as an understanding of the limits that our body is placing. So we know pain expression. Pain is typically something a trigger for our body to tell us that something is kind of wrong or with some impaired movement pattern. So it's the same with tightness. It's just an indication sometimes from the nervous system that kind of you're taking something to an end range. So moving back into some of the terminology we're going to use today. So we start with agonist. So in most exercises, there's going to be an agonist antagonist. So the agonist is typically the main control of the joint movement. It's also referred to as a resistance fighter. We're going to have the antagonist, which is the opposite to the agonist, which will produce an opposing joint force to that agonist, which can also be referred to as a joint manager. We have stability. And again, the term stability and flexibility mobility is bandied about, but these are just my understanding and kind of how I like to explain it to my clients. So the stability is going to be the ability to resist undesirable movements and forces. Tone and tightness is going to be the readiness and contraction of a muscle tissue. Flexibility is the ability for a muscle to passively access a range of motion. Mobility is, again, slightly different to flexibility. It's the joint's now ability to actively move through a desired range of motion. So flexibility and mobility, again, if we take anything away from this first slide, it's understanding flexibility is typically related to a muscle, and mobility will typically be related to a joint. So being able to decipher those two things is going to be helpful when you hear people talk about flexibility, mobility, etc. And then bracing, which again, you've heard Ben talk a lot about, is the ability to just align the thoracic and pelvic parts of the diaphragm and maintain intra-abdominal pressure. So there are a few of the points that you may hear today, but again, kind of everything is going to be used in context. So if we move into the first slide, to give you an example of agonist antagonist, I've essentially kind of created an image here, which the easiest to explain is kind of a leg extension. So I always say with clients, kind of learning anatomy in isolation is important, but it's imperative that we understand kind of how the body moves and basic relationships between muscle tissues and structures. This is why the word isolation in the industry is kind of, I don't really like, because we can never. When I speak about fascia later on, you're going to understand that no muscle moves singly. And from this example here, you can see no muscle moves singly. So being able to totally isolate a muscle kind of is impossible, because there's interrelationships between muscles that enable muscles to move in unison. So kind of I like to talk about relative isolation. So when you're here and you've probably heard in your journey up to this point, oh, it's an isolation exercise. it's not really an total isolation exercise. It's more of a relative isolation exercise. So understanding that muscles do work in unison with each other, and the agonist and antagonist are typically kind of going to help to stabilize. So using this example above, you'll see I've noted on the slide that the agonist to a knee extension is going to be your quadriceps because that's a working muscle. The antagonist is going to be your hamstrings and sometimes your gastroc, just because of where it kind of comes in and attaches into the back of a knee. Also understanding that antagonist doesn't mean relax. So you'll hear reciprocal inhibition kind of used a lot of the time when speaking about the antagonist, but reciprocal inhibition is basically just a relaxing of a muscle to facilitate the movement of another muscle. So for context in this exercise, you might hear a coach or somebody say that kind of there's reciprocal inhibition in the hamstring here when performing a knee extension, but we know that lengths of muscles is super important. And as the quadricep is shortening through this quad, by default, the hamstring will have to lengthen. Because of where they're attaching to the joint and kind of the opposing forces, there's going to have to be a co-contraction. So kind of, for me, kind of the word reciprocal inhibition and a muscle relaxing as you move through a movement is not possible. How I tend to look at muscles is when performing an exercise, whether it be a chest press, there is muscles that are getting shortened and muscles that are getting lengthened. So for context, they're all still working. Okay, so to add a bit of context, those of you guys that work behind desks and kind of sit at a computer, TK, I know you spend a lot of time sat behind your computer from a work perspective. We know that naturally our body's going to fall into this internally rotated position, okay, naturally. So kind of through kind of from a structural standpoint, over time, your body's going to get used to being internally rotated. So from a musculature standpoint, what does that do? So everything on the front here, so kind of typically your anterior deltoids, your medial deltoids, some of your rotator cuff muscles, and typically your upper traps tend to become shortened because we're in this internally rotated position. If reciprocal inhibition was a thing, then you would say, well, everything on the back, so your rear delts, kind of your mid traps, rhomboids, etc., should be kind of loose and lax, but they're actually on length. So that creates obviously poor posture as we move through. So to rectify that, what we're looking at is kind of improving thoracic mobility and those sort of things from a strength perspective, to be able to start to balance those out. So understanding that muscles kind of work together in unison as opposed to in isolation, especially in single joint movements like the leg extension, is important to know because your body is very clever at adapting to any scenarios that it's put in. So understanding the role of relationship of muscles is going to be super important. So moving back to the knee extension, just to give you a little bit of context. So kind of obviously using the knee extension as an example, there's going to be some of you, I know Matt struggled with this in the past in regards to tightness in quads. Typically, you would look at this exercise and think, oh, it's just that my quads are tight as to why I can't get full knee extension. But if you look at the interrelationship of the antagonist, so your hamstrings, your gastroc, kind of, they could be inhibited, which essentially kind of entire, which you're going to down produce force that your quadricep is able to kind of produce. So typically, if you do struggle to get into certain positions, for an exercise, so again, using a knee extension, which is predominantly a quad exercise, you would typically think it's your quads that are weak or tight. But what it could be your hamstring, it could be your gastroc, it could be your sciatic nerve, it could be a protective mechanism in regards to any knee traumas that you have. It could also be the downregulation of neural input due to the structural protection. So there's a number of things that could be wrong and could inhibit you from going through a full range of movements. So by understanding the role and relationship of the agonist and antagonist through a lot of movements that you'll be going through in your program is going to really allow you to understand kind of and identify really where your potential limitations are from a structural perspective and what we need to work on to fix those. So in the industry, you hear a lot of keep talk about stretching muscles and those sort of things. But all what you guys will know with working with muscle intelligence for a while now is what Ben preaches in regards to strength exercises are essentially rehab exercises. They are flexibility and mobility exercises. There's going to be certain parts in regards to the shoulder, like the rotator cuff, that isn't going to allow us to kind of go through as much strength work, and the loads that we're going to be using are a lot lighter. But ultimately, strength work is going to be your best friend alongside certain kind of stretches and mobility to help create dysfunction, to help remedy dysfunction and ensure that you stay healthy from a longevity standpoint. And this is all stuff that's going to be important, and how it feeds back into your guys in particular is everybody wants to be healthy for as long as possible from a longevity standpoint. So exercise should be preventative in regards to anti-aging. So in regards to that, we need to make sure exercise is safe and effective and reduce injury risk, which in turn, understanding these things is going to be important for you guys to just start to identify kind of where your potential limitations are. If there is any aches and pains within the system and certain exercises cause you a little bit of pain, it'll be a lot easier with your coach to be able to understand what's going on from a postural standpoint and remedy it, by putting the right exercises in to strengthen what potentially may be an over-lengthened muscle or an over-shortened muscle as well. So I'm going to introduce sling systems now. Again, those of you that have heard sling systems and those of you that hadn't, essentially sling systems is something that's, there's a chap called Dr. Thomas Myers, kind of a book's called Anatomy Trains, and there's been a lot of talk about how sling systems help kind of protect your body from a kind of longevity standpoint. So it talks a lot about fascia. Okay, so a lot of it is kind of, a lot of those are hypotheses, but essentially we can relate to how one's muscle movements influences other, therefore, structure. So although there's a little bit of gray area around sling systems, we do know one thing for sure, that fascia is super important in regards to protecting muscle and the whole structure. So those of you that have seen fascia before, kind of, I've been lucky enough to kind of see fascia in kind of a real life scenario standpoint. Fascia is basically a big sheath. It's a big sheath that if you took it off as one, it looks like a protective Spider-Man suit that surrounds your whole body, and your body's covered in it from head to toe. Okay, so what is fascia? Fascia is basically a term used in anatomy to refer to a band or sheet of connective tissue. It typically is primary collagen that lies beneath the skin and basically can attach, stabilize, enclose, and separate muscles and other internal organs. In context, it's basically an integral part of our musculoskeletal system and plays a crucial role in supporting and protecting the body's structures. So when you feel tightness and inhibition, yes, it can be muscle, but a lot of it's going to be related to fascia as well. It is quite highly innervated as well. It's got quite a significant amount of sensory receptors as well, which can contribute to certain things like proprioception, which is obviously the body's ability to sense its position and movement in space, and also pain perception. It's going to also play a role in force transmission, during muscular contraction, and it's, they say, and I believe, that kind of its health and its flexibility are important for overall movement and function. So when we're looking at longevity, we understand that fascia is going to play an important role in keeping the system healthy to be able to perform at high levels for the long term, essentially. When you do have dysfunction with fascia, it can lead to things like pain, restricted movement, and various other musculoskeletal disorders. But primarily, if going back to my point earlier on in regards to situational positions, in regards to nature of jobs and those sort of things, we know that kind of if we put our, essentially posturally, if we go into a dysfunctional state for long periods of time, then that's going to have a negative effect on fascia. So using understanding fascia and its role in relationship is super important, more from a postural standpoint, because I was talking to a client about this today and understanding posture. Like most of us guys, when we've been to the gym, want to build a bigger chest, right? So typically people are like, oh, I need to do more chest. But if we understand muscles, movements, the role of fascia in regards to all this, as I've just mentioned a second ago, when you spend a lot of time at a desk, we get chronically internally rotated. Okay, so if we spend a lot of time in internal rotation, the ability to take your pecs through a full range of movement is going to be pretty much reduced. So, kind of if we look at the muscles that surround the thoracic spine, so typically, as I said earlier, everything in this front portion is going to be shortened, and then everything on the back, i.e., the rhomboids, mid traps, etc., are going to be lengthened and going to be upward moving. So, in regards to building a bigger chest for somebody that's internally rotated, do we need to do more chest, or do we potentially need to strengthen the muscles over the back that are on length? So, if we look at the rhomboids and the mid traps, and we start to get them stronger in their shorter position and take them out of that lengthened position, instantly it brings your shoulders back into neutral alignment. Which, if we look at it from back to front, if you guys can see my screen here, I know I'm probably small if I've got the slides up. If I'm internally rotated, does my shoulder, my chest look bigger here or here? So, understanding the role of the musculoskeletal system and also kind of the role of kind of the fascia that surrounds that is going to be super important. So if there is any tightness, if there is any inhibition, it's important that we work through it if we want a balanced physique, but also from a longevity standpoint, if we want to be stay functional for long periods of time, well into our 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s as well. So the body's a very clever being and is in it kind of understands a lot of things and it gets used to being in certain positions. So it's imperative that we kind of keep ourselves moving, but most importantly, start continue to understand our limitations and how we can make them strengths. I've been in industry now for 20 plus years. I've assessed thousands of people, and I've never physically assessed somebody from a structural assessment that was perfectly balanced. Sportsmen and women, kind of high performing athletes, general population. I've never met anybody that's perfectly balanced. There's always people with potential limitations from a left to right, front to back, top to bottom. And understanding your limitations is going to be your greatest strength, because when you guys all do get to, if it is your goal to get to 10% and get the leanest and the most muscular you've ever been, you want that tissue to be balanced. So understanding kind of where limitations are is going to be important in the initial part of your this process, simply because we can then understand and pretty much guarantee what you're going to look like when you become when you get lean as well. So structural balance is a super important part of your journey. So
I'd love to ask a couple people on the call, and because I'm sure there's plenty of people that can relate to exactly what you're talking to. If I'd be curious if we I don't want to interrupt the presentation, but
yeah, that's all right, man.
I feel like we could pick on a couple people.
Yeah, that's cool. That's cool. I can only see a few people on my screen because I've got the slides in front of me. So go ahead, pick on a couple of people. That's fine, mate. And let's hear what we've got to say.
Well, I'll just give it a second, and if anybody wants to chime in, if there's anything specific to them.
I can start it, Steve here.
Hi, Steve.
Hey, how you going? I've had tightness through kind of a right area of my hip, and I think as a result, when I'm doing kind of squats or whatever, what I find is I get a hip bias, so my hips kind of move to the right, and then it's not a problem picking the weight up, but it's when it's putting it down, and that's been loading the lower right side of my back, and since I've been doing more kind of stretching. That dominance has become less, and it's something I'm really kind of mindful of and actively working on to avoid or to remediate, I guess.
You'll probably find a lot of people and a lot of us guys. I know I'm the same from having a Korean soccer, you guys call it, but football this side of the pond is kind of the one of the two biggest places that we want to look at individually is going to be your hips and your thoracic. I believe the hips are the big player where most dysfunction above and below, kind of, unless there's some trauma in there, is going to start at the hips, just because the reality, unfortunately, in life, a lot of us spend a lot of time sitting down and it's putting us into that anteriorly tilted position. So we're going to be sat down a lot of the time, but you're right in what you say, Steve, in regards to typically what you'll see if there isn't an ability to what I describe as get over a hip in regards to create adequate flexion, because typically you're not going to often see people with a posterior tilted pelvis, which is a bum tucked under, you're going to typically see with an anterior tilted pelvis where that pelvis falls forward. And then typically you're going to see a discrepancy left to right. And I'm going to talk through sling systems in a second, which will identify a little bit more around kind of fascial lines that potentially may be pertaining to the injury, but also I think kind of understanding you're doing the right things in regards to being able to isolate kind of that area and understand its area. But I use a phrase within kind of my coaching is the site of pain is typically not the source. So asking you a question, have you had any tears, breaks, kind of injuries to any side of kind of lower limbs, upper limbs, kind of to that hip at all, Steve?
No, it was the other side. So like, so the injury or the tightness is on my right side, but I tore my lateral collateral ligament on the left knee. So it could be that there's a counteract to that.
Perfect. Great. That's a great example. Kind of, again, what will happen when you spend a lot of time rehabbing that left knee? There's going to be a massive bias to that right side, which is going to create a little bit of inhibition in that right hip in the musculature, because let's face it, from a trauma knee, kind of the hips are going to shift to accommodate what your body believes is natural gait. So your gait's going to be impacted. Anybody that's had any knee injuries, ankle injuries, kind of, you know that you limp for a certain period of time. So your body almost gets used to being in a disproportionate position. So understanding that kind of what you'll probably find, Steve, is internal, external rotation through that right hip has probably been compromised through obviously having that trauma to your left knee. So working through internal, external rotation jaws to allow that almost the head of that femur to move effectively in that acetabulum, but ultimately start to get a little bit more movement from an internal external rotation position will probably help alongside your stretches to be able for your body to start to become a little bit more balanced.
Yeah, the other side as well is just when you stand and you're standing still, how close your feet are. So your left foot might be under shoulder, but your right might be slightly inwards, which is then kind of your standing gait is then putting that reliance on that right side as well. So try and move that right foot out a bit when you're standing to kind of even it out and distribute the load.
Yeah, absolutely. Kind of, you hear Ben talk about it a lot, and I'm a big proponent of kind of understanding gait and how we walk is attributed to how we function in exercise. If you've got an impatient gait, it's going to have an effect when you come to exercise, and there's going to be a disproportionate balance between muscles, because remember what I said at the start of the slideshow, you've got agonist, antagonist, you've got muscles that work in tandem and in unison. And for walking, our body has, so how I look at the body is kind of ankles, knees, hips, lumbar spine, thoracic spine, cervical spine. Each one of those six joints require either stability or mobility. So ankle, hip and thoracic spine require mobility. Knee, lumbar spine and cervical spine require stability. If there is any disruption to kind of that flow and then working in unison, i.e. something like your injury, Steve, your body's got to get used to not having the adequate amount of mobility in the mobility in the ankle, stability in the knee and mobility in that left hip through injury to try and balance. So without that stability in the knee, there's going to be almost a disproportionate gait pattern, which you'll stand a little bit different. You'll probably walk a little bit different. So having an awareness of gait is super important when it comes to kind of understanding the body as a whole and being able to kind of identify tightness, how you sit. I would encourage every single one of you guys, when you're at your desks, either today, tomorrow, the next day, take a moment to understand and have a look how you sit at your desk, kind of, because quite often, kind of, I know with my left leg, I tend to sit this right side. You guys will have seen when I did the exercise, my chair's a little bit wonky, but literally I have this left shoulder elevated a little bit as well. So I have to work really hard to sit very neutral, very square when I'm on calls, because I have a tendency to kind of lean to the left-hand side. But if you're spending long periods of time in those positions, i.e. 6 hours a day, 4 hours a day, 8 hours a day, when you go home, typically sitting with your foot beneath your bum and those sort of things, kind of, it can all lead to kind of dysfunctional patterns, which then when you go to put them together into something like a squat, which, let's face it, is a very complex movement that requires all those six joints that I've just mentioned to be moving in harmony and unison, there's going to be dysfunction in there. So I'm not asking you guys to kind of look at how you walk all day, every day, but just having awareness of your body and kind of having bodily awareness is going to be super important in regards to how you move on a day to day. Because let's face it, if you train 3 hours a week, 5 hours a week, there's still 163 to 165 hours in the week that you've got to be moving efficiently to be able to add to the workouts when you come to do them as well. Has anybody else got any questions up to this point that they'd like to ask that I haven't made clear? Is everybody good? Have you got any other questions, Andrew? Does that make sense up to this point? Yeah, good. Good. Right. Moving on, which is great because obviously Steve's question is awesome. Yeah.
Looks like TK threw a question in the chat. Thoughts on ISTM, Gastron, etc.
Graston.
Graston, yeah, Graston's great, mate. Kind of therapy work is good. I just don't like the terminology, and I'm against kind of the belief that kind of you can get knots in your fascia, just because knowing how strong and how tight fascia becomes, kind of, it knots don't typically appear, because if you actually see fascia in function, and as I've said to you, I've been lucky enough to do a couple of cadavers in my time, and seeing how tautly strong fascia is, it's impossible. But kind of things like Graston and therapies along those sort of things to kind of mobilize tissue, I think, yeah, fantastic. I'm a big proponent of therapy work, but one thing I'm big on with therapy work is it's got to be something to back it up. So I always say kind of having therapy work without having a sufficient exercise program to strengthen the tissues that you potentially loosen, it's no point. So you look at a chiropractor, you walk in, they crack you, you walk out, they ask you to see them 3 times a week. So all they're doing is typically correcting you, but the patterns still stay dysfunctional. If you are having therapy work, make sure you choose a therapist that's talking to you, that understands exercise, talks to you a little bit like we do as coaches in regards to understanding your limitations in regards to your body and what potential things you may need to be working on to cement the work they're doing. Because I know it might be different kind of, and then you'll know TK here in kind of the UK, but kind of typically kind of therapists want you to see them 3 or 4 times a week, whereas a role of therapy should be kind of a 3 month stint. And slowly but surely, they should wean you off to where you move, you're functional again. So kind of for me, therapy is a great addition, all types of therapy, as long as it's backed up with strength work and kind of the work surrounding it to ensure that you're cementing potential releasing and stuff that the therapist is doing.
Dan, I got one more from Des.
Yeah.
What is more prominent in the golf swing, mobility or flexibility?
Great question, Des. I'm a mad golfer myself, so kind of great question. So for me, kind of it's a combination of both. So if we look at the golf swing, kind of it's very rotational, which I'm going to talk about the spiral line in a second in regards to the fascia. But kind of for me, it's a combination of both. Okay. I'd say golf swing, primarily as you start a golf swing, it's going to be stability, because you've got to have that ground reaction force and stability through the lower half of your body, because you'll know, being a golfer, most of your force is generated through the hips. It's not generated with your upper body and your thoracic, it's generated through your hips. So having adequate stability and mobility in your hips is going to be important. Okay, so if I had to answer the question, I'd say mobility is more important for golf alongside stability. Because if we look at the golf swing, as I said, most of your power is going to come from the hips in a rotational plane. And then again, upper body and understanding kind of how the thoracic moves in rotation as well is going to be super important. So when we look at the spiral line in a second, kind of that'll be prominent. But to answer your question, Des, I'd say mobility probably is the most important factor when it comes to a golf swing. Right, so moving on, guys, kind of, I've got this next slide up, which just gives you a, basically, it's an example and a visual of essentially kind of what your fascia does and how it's interconnected. Okay, so it's tensional integrity or tensegrity. Okay, it's a great example of how fascial integration works. So you'll see the structure in the image. Okay, the structural stability is created by nothing external, but the poles that you see internal and the opposing forces. So that's pretty similar to how your body works in regards to the fascia, in understanding that the body, from a kind of structural stability standpoint, starts from within. So you've heard Ben and the team talk about kind of how important the diaphragm is and kind of all those sort of structures internal. Without internal stability, you can forget about everything external. So yes, we can sit on machines like the leg extension, the chest press, and have stability from a machine. But without creating internal stability, when we're looking at longevity and when we're looking at kind of being fit for life, ultimately, and kind of living toward age, being able to still kind of reach down, reach up, and all the movements that are associated with day-to-day life, you're going to come short. So kind of having a nice blend of exercises, but understanding in the foundation phase is probably going to be a lot more relative isolation exercises, moving into quite kind of your more multi-joint exercises moving forward, which obviously your coach will have been speaking to you about anyway. But I just like that as an infographic, just because it's a great example of kind of how that fascial integration works. So last few slides, we're going to move into the sling systems. Okay, so there's three prominent sling systems that I'm going to talk about kind of in regards to fascia and kind of how it attaches. So we're going to start with the spiral line. Okay, so the spiral line essentially wraps from head to toe in almost a double helix style pattern. So you'll see at the front, it's in a cross section, and then it goes up, down, up through your spine, essentially. A great example of how we use a spiral line is if you look at babies. So you look at how babies crawl, okay? So typically babies won't crawl left foot, left knee together, right foot, right knee together, right? Typically they'll go right knee, left hand, left knee, right hand, okay? So that's essentially the spiral line. And the next point is important for everything that you said, Steve, in regards to what it's primarily associated with. So if we look at ourselves as adults, when we walk down the road, have you ever tried to walk left foot and left hand? I'd ask you to try it because you'll look silly. And I think I saw it on a social media video at some point, trying to walk or run with the same side. It's practically impossible, okay? Because that's, again, looking at the fascia, that's your spiral line. So it's going to be primarily associated with gait. So without this system as an overriding factor, essentially kind of we as humans would expend a lot more energy when walking a movement. The reason for that is because the fascia in this line, it almost acts as a slingshot mechanism, allowing us walking essentially to be more of a recoil mechanism rather than conscious contractions. Because if we were just creating conscious contractions, then we know that kind of in regards to energy expended, it's going to be far superior. So the fascia in this line essentially acts as more of a recoil mechanism. So what we're looking for in this line is essentially co-contractions of opposing limbs to create stability and allow for forward movement. So to give you context, what sort of exercises could we be using to kind of that require the spiral line? So looking at something like a single arm dumbbell row. Okay. So a single arm dumbbell row where you've got your left knee on the bench and you're using your right arm to pull that elbow towards the base of your spine. That would be an example of kind of using that spiral line in function, because you require that to be active to create a stable. Because you guys will know, as you start to go heavy, and kind of if you find that as you start to go heavy, you struggle to hold the weight, your torso is not aligned and kind of everything feels a little bit heavier. That's a little bit of an exemplification that potentially we might need to do some work from a spiral line perspective. So in regards to what movements we can use to kind of strengthen the spiral line, things like anything that pertains spiral rotation. So spinal rotation, sorry. So as I said to you, kind of single arm dumbbell rows, you guys may have done an exercise where you do a single arm seated row with kind of thoracic rotation or spinal rotation. Kind of that's a great one. So anything that kind of allows essentially that spine to rotate, things like side bends and thing movements that require lateral flexion are great for the spiral line, and also kind of flexion and forward and flexion extension through that spine as well is going to help strengthen that spiral line, but keep it healthy, if that makes sense. So kind of it's kind of, for me, one of the imperative lines to understand left and right, and with its association with gait, it's super important. Just a side note on this while I'm on it as well is, those of you guys, which I'm sure you all are doing cardio kind of, and a lot, I get the question a lot of time. Okay. A lot of times, oh, can I run? I run. Okay. I look at the photos, I look at their movement patterns, and I'm like, I asked them to send me a video of them walking, and I noticed kind of there's a hip shift to the left and the right. Okay. If we understood that running is basically just accelerated gait, and if somebody can't walk efficiently, what's running going to do if it's accelerated gait? It's going to exacerbate the risk of injury, right? So kind of for me, understanding that is important, because if somebody can't walk efficiently, then running is just going to compound the dysfunction that's being created through impact and gait. So you might hear your coach say, when they say about running, I'm not too sure. Kind of the context behind that is, a lot of the time is because if there is a lot of dysfunction, when it's minimal dysfunction, you can get away with running. And sometimes when somebody enjoys running and it's mentally freeing, we can add it in. But ultimately, if there is a dysfunction there that's quite severe, I'd always advise against running, just because, again, running is essentially accelerated gait and is just going to hammer home the dysfunction that's apparent before you even go into running as well. So those of you guys that have been runners or have ran before and finish a run, feel great mentally but feel banged up the next day, just, again, over the points that I've made during this slide, just, again, have a look at your gait. Put a little camera up and walk away 5 meters away from a camera with no shoes on, and just have a look at what your feet are doing, what your hips are doing, what your knees are doing, just to assess your gait and kind of whether kind of running is right for you, essentially. Right. So moving into one of my favorite sling systems, it's a posterior oblique sling system. So again, the posterior oblique sling system is important. It's a big player. The characteristics of it is basically it's the opposing lap and essentially glute max through thoracolumbar fascia. So left lap, right glutes. So with its integration of this sling, it's important for production. So power and speed, it can also be very useful to train posterior chain. But understanding kind of when this is weak, kind of this is identified because, again, it's connected by that thoracolumbar fascia. Typically, and potentially a lot of the time when people have lower back pain, typically SI joint pain, you can usually kind of attribute it to poor receptors of the lat and the glute. So kind of for me, anybody like you, Steve, that's got kind of a hip hike, I definitely assess and have a look at the posterior oblique sling system, because we know if that's not moving efficiently and kind of we're not kind of moving through movements that are going to suffice in strengthening this posterior oblique system, the chance of it breaking down through bigger movements like deadlifts and any pulling from the floor can be massively increased. So you've probably heard me say before that quite often lower back pain, I said earlier on, site of pain is never the source of pain. Typically, when anybody's ever come to me with lower back pain, the lower back is not the problem. Like people always think that kind of, oh, my lower back hurts, it must be weak. Typically, what I find 9 times out of 10 is the lower back hurts because it's facilitating the lack of strength in a lot of other musculature, i.e. glutes, hamstrings, potentially a little bit of inhibition in the lats as well. And by working those in relative isolation, and being able to work those in single joint movements and get them stronger, then putting them back into bigger exercises, everything functions a lot better. And that's just understanding the role and relationship of musculature, how it pertains to fascia. So for me, kind of, as I said to you, back injuries, unless somebody's had some specific trauma around there, a lot of people I've spoke to have disc issues. So you'll find it's always L5-S1. When anybody has any bulging disc, it's L5-S1. And it's just because that back is very effective in taking the strain when other muscles aren't as strong and are a little bit tighter, i.e. glutes and the hamstrings. And this is why I talk to my guys so much about training posterior chain, not just for strength and size goals and big booties, but also in regards to functionality, because its role and relationship in posture is super important. Training the lats in isolation is super important. So kind of for me, understanding that lower back pain is not quite often the issue and it's all the tissues surrounding it is super important when you're looking at a functional body. As I said, kind of it's related to and it's important for force production, specifically power and speed. And we need power and speed for doing simple tasks, picking stuff off the floor with our left hand that's near the right foot, reaching into a cupboard with our right hand that's on our left shoulder. There's all sorts of movements that work in day-to-day life. And anybody that's had their back, if their back's ever gone and kind of it's created an injury, it will never go doing something like a 100-kilo deadlift or a 200-pound deadlift. It'll go going down to pick your child off the floor, reaching in the car to get your key if you've dropped it in the footwell, typically because the body is very efficient way at managing loads when you're moving through heavy loads, and injuries always occur in smaller nominal movements. But having an awareness of how the interrelationship between these work is super important. So to train the posterior oblique sling system, sorry, I'm mincing my words now, I typically use contralateral training. So what contralateral training is, let's say you've got a split squat of some sort. So you've got your right foot forward, okay, in a split squat. Okay, I'd have a dumbbell in my left hand. So contralateral training is just having or working one side while another side is moving. Another good example is essentially if you're doing a cable pull down, but a kneeling cable pull down, and you're loading this right hip and glute. So you're getting that co-contraction of the left lat and the right glute. So kind of anything that creates that co-contraction will typically challenge that posterior oblique sling system, but it's a big one for things like SI joint pain and those sort of things. So when we look at back, when I particularly look at back injuries, I'm typically looking at the musculature involved in this posterior oblique sling system in regards to what I can deal with my end. And then the last one I want to talk about today is basically the deep front line. So it's probably, it includes all the deepest lying muscles. Okay, so your adductors, your psoas, your pelvic floor, your diaphragm. So they're all muscles that are kind of layer 4 or 5 if we was to go inside in regards. So they're very deep muscles that this one kind of affects. It's important kind of for kind of aligning the ribcage and pelvis. So going back to our original point, what is bracing? It's the ability to kind of be able to work between a thoracic and our pelvic kind of floor and be able to create intra-abdominal pressure, right? So understanding kind of the deep front line and kind of how important the little muscles are. So being a man, kind of how often do you go into the gym and see men sat on the adductor machine? Not very often, right? But hopefully you guys can see that with kind of things like not so much your pelvic floor, but especially the breathing that you guys should all be doing and you've been kind of asked to do by your coaches, kind of any particular stretching and those sort of things that are going to work through these kind of areas is going to be super important, because what that's going to be doing is going to be strengthening and releasing that deep front line of fascia, which from a structural stability standpoint is giving you a big opportunity to progress. The adductor is one of my favorite machines. Coach Gavin hasn't got it in my program at the moment that I'm going to shout at him about, but ultimately kind of training adductors and the smaller muscles that are responsible for kind of helping us move on to bigger exercises. So I'm a big believer in kind of it's important from the first role of program design is injury prevention. So I talk to my clients about it a lot, and Matt will know this, kind of when they come in, everybody wants to squat, bench, deadlift, and those sort of things, which is great. And our goal is to get you to squat, bench, and dead, if that's what you want to do. But can you do it effectively from the start? And the answer to that a lot of the time is right from the get-go, probably not. But is there tricks and tips that we can use and say, right, in 2 months' time and phase two of your program, I want you under a bar and I want you squatting. But before, what we're going to do is we're going to work this, this, and this, and this. And this is what we need to strengthen in relative isolation, and then put it all together. And then going back to the question earlier on, kind of you're able to get under a squat and just drop kind of into a great active range and everything feels great. There's no kind of left to right movement. There's no kind of back pain. All there is legs and glutes. That's the goal of program design. And understanding kind of the sling systems is super important, just in its role in relationship, and understand that nothing moves in isolation. So I use the analogy of a T-bone steak. Okay, so look at the delts and the pecs as a T-bone steak. So you know the T-bone steak, you pull one side on the left side of the bone and the other side moves. That's like in your pecs and your delts. People think that kind of when you're using your pec, that you're not getting the anterior delt, but it's impossible with the connective tissue and also the joints that your when your pec moves, your anterior delt has to move. The same as you move into a lateral raise, as your anterior delt shortens, and moves away, that pec has to move up and come across to accommodate. Can we minimize the action of the pec? Yes. And can we try to put a massive amount of a load on the delts? Yes. But understanding that muscles will always move in unison is something that's important, especially when we're looking to internalize exercise. So I see exercise as two-pronged. There's two parts to exercise. There's external movement and internal dialogue. The external movement is what you're performing, the exercise you're performing with whatever apparatus it is. And that will typically require internal stability if it's dumbbells, or no internal stability if you're just using, let's say, a leg extension machine. But the second part of exercising is internal dialogue. What are you thinking about? What's the goal of the exercise? What joints are we looking to move? What's the muscle action? And understanding these makes you think about exercise a lot more, which allows you to become more efficient, all leading into kind of a functional, healthy body. So as you'll hear me on a lot of these calls, I'll talk about a lot of different things when it comes to kind of internalizing exercise. And I think understanding the sling systems, understanding how fascia relates to and helps support the muscles that you're training, but also kind of understanding exercise and what the role of exercise is, and thinking about that is going to be a great tool in your arsenal to be able to move forward. So for me, it is these things. Probably a new to use guys, and I don't need you to kind of overthink these, but there are important movements because every single one of us sat here has fascia in our body and want to make sure that fascia is there to support all the hard work that you're doing in your programs at the moment. Then the other three sling systems that I'm not going to elaborate on today, just because I don't want to talk too much about them, is the superficial back line, the superficial front line, and then the lateral line. And if you was interested in learning a little bit more about fascia and the hypothesis behind it, kind of as I said to you, the book that I'd always refer people to is by Dr. Thomas Myers. It's called Anatomy Trains, if any of you guys want any kind of extra reading when it comes to fascia. Right. So lastly, kind of, I just wanted to give you some of my final notes on sling systems. So basically, you can use sling systems as a map to identify any compensatory patterns and allow you to understand what's not doing its role. So it allows you to self-diagnose, give better feedback to your coach in regards to what you're feeling. Because the reality with us as coaches, we can have a look at your videos and movements like might look great, but we can't be there and understand what you're feeling. So understanding kind of how your body moves and what feels tight, what feels a little bit inhibited, is great for you to verbalize to your coach, because it allows us to kind of get an understanding of potentially what we need to work on in different phases of the program. So what also gives you a greater understanding of how your body moves, and being in tune with your body is the biggest skill that you can learn in this process, because it's your body for the rest of your life, right? So you've got to kind of make sure that you kind of maximize it. I like to think of sling systems as train tracks and specific muscles or bony landmarks or joints as stations. So just think about it this way. If one of the stations is down, it's going to impact things up and down the line. So if there's a dysfunctional joint, if something's not working, if there's inhibition in that joint and kind of potential trauma or kind of limitations, then it's going to affect everything up and down that line from a muscular and a fascial standpoint. And also, and the last thing, the proximity will determine the severity of a compensation. So typically, the further away kind of something is, the less it's going to be affected. So anything close to the hip, anything close to the shoulder will typically be the most affected. And then as you move down into the kind of fingers and toes, it's probably going to be a little less affected. But again, looking at the body as those six joints in regards to ankles, knees, hips, lumbar, thoracic, cervical, and understanding each one requires stability or mobility. And the easiest way to remember it is start at the ankles, mobility, stability in the knees, mobility in the hips, stability in the lumbar, mobility in the thoracic spine, and then stability in the cervical spine. And understand to perform big exercises, they all need to be working harmoniously and they all need to be working together. Right, that's all I've got today, guys. So I'm going to let me just end this slideshow and stop sharing. Okay, but up to this point, I know kind of I did ramble on a little bit, but did all that make sense? And is there any questions that you guys have off the back of that?
Yeah, and I'd ask a question. How do we keep fascia healthy on a day-to-day basis? I know there's obviously going to be flexibility and things like that, but like anything nutritionally that you would suggest to the boys that they could start to think about in terms of keeping fascia supple and nice tissue quality, you know?
Yeah. So again, from a supplementation standpoint, I like folic acid and B12 kind of from a fascial standpoint is always good. But kind of, I think kind of getting a wide range of macro and micronutrients and not underestimating the effects of micronutrients within a diet and not just looking at kind of macronutrients is super important. So looking at all the kind of minerals that are required. And again, as we spoke about on the track yesterday, you're going to get a great view of those of you guys that are on the tracker of kind of mineral content, which is going to be super important in keeping the systems healthy.
Man. Anybody else resonate with any of the issues that Dan came up with tonight in terms of specific areas in the body? Just show of hands or drop a comment in the chat. Because one thing we see when, Thompson, the SI joint for sure. Like, I think I mentioned you in the chat, which what we're going to obviously double down on your program, is that L5-S1 is fantastic for opening up that low back. If you look at the position that you go into in the L5-S1 LDOA, you're pushing the feet up against the wall, but you're trying to pull the feet away from the wall. So essentially, you're getting the muscles on the front anterior to contract, and it's all that super fit, the deep front line that Dan finished on. All that deep front line has to activate, which essentially then you're going to lengthen everything else on the posterior chain. But if you look at where the arms are going through the lats and pushing away, well, now, if you look at those two segments that Dan was talking about for that back line, you're separating everything away from the lumbar spine, especially the L5-S1, but the SI joint itself as well. So you're getting the activation from the front. Obviously, those muscles are contracting, which fascia is going to, because obviously it's going to go through the muscles, it's going to start to open up a little bit more. So that's what we're going to do is double down on that. But then also, I'm a big, big fan for mobility. In looking at breath work as well, like really starting to get control of the diaphragm. And it might be that I'm asking you to do inhales, exhales for like 20 in, 20 out, 30 in, 30 out, and build you to that. Because as soon as you can start to open up that diaphragm, your thoracic starts to move a lot better. Your hips start to open up a touch more, you know? So, and that's the other effect of the diaphragm work and the breath work is your nervous system. So you take a look at somebody that goes to yoga. Like it's the ability to handle that uncomfortable position and you breathe through it. It's not that you're holding the position and getting flexible. It may be, but you look at how your nervous system's really being affected. There's the breath that's allowing the nervous system to open up, right? So that's where the breath work's really going to start to come in and help the mobility. So we'll be doubling down on that, man.
And it's all also to off the back of the SI joint, I probably didn't mention when I was speaking as well. What are the two main joints of the spine that typically people struggle with? It's the lumbar, and it will probably be the cervical, the neck, up right at the top here. What movement do those two joints require? They require stability. So if we look at the joints above and below them, so the thoracic and the hips, what do they require? Mobility. Typically, you'll find any joint issues quite followed by, as Gav just mentioned there, kind of lack of, as well as breath, lack of mobility in the areas that are closest to it that require mobility. So again, with any neck issues, we know that the traps are going to be typically hypertonic, which means it kind of is going to be compression of the vertebra up in the cervical spine. If there's no movement through the hips, then you know typically there's going to be a little bit of compression in that lumbar spine. So kind of looking at it by joint and being able to create mobility where it's mobility, where it requires mobility, will typically lead to a little bit more stability in the contravening joints as well. And just to answer your point, Des, as well, always struggle with AC joint pain for years, even more so in golf swing. So for you, just what do you do as a job, Des?
Poker player.
A what player?
Poker player.
Poker player, yeah. So what do you spend most of your time doing? Sat down. So I'd say your AC joint pain for me is a positional issue as opposed to anything. So again, if you're sat at a table here, you never sit at a poker table like so. Shoulders back, arms by your side here. You're forward, you've got your cards on the table, you're eyeballing everybody, and you're making sure that you're winning. Okay, but ultimately, what's that doing? That's putting the shoulder into an internally rotated position. So all the musculature on the front is shortened and pulled round, and everything on the back is up and over the top here. If we look at the scapula with internal rotation of the shoulder and bits of shoulder flexion, that scapula is going to should effectively move up and around that ribcage at around about 45 degrees. Okay, but if you're chronically in this position, anytime you do any potentially any pressing movement, we're in this position. So it's loading that anterior delt and the AC joint. If we're doing any pulling movement, we're stuck here, which again is loading that AC joint. So for me, kind of, again, Andrew will probably have told you this already, but getting thoracic mobility in, especially in the golf swing, like the reality with a golf swing, you require a little bit of flexion over in your joints. So internal, so you're spending a lot of time in internal rotation. So strengthening that thoracic and getting you more mobile in that thoracic to allow that shoulder to sit into a more neutral position is going to help, one, from a muscular standpoint in regards to balance and make your physique look better, but hopefully bring your shoulder into a little bit more alignment, which will take that pain away in the positions that you're spending a lot of time in.
How many of you guys want to build a chest? Hands up.
Me. Absolutely.
Andrew G, looks like you look jacked. I can't see your chest, but you're looking jacked there, man, already. So I think getting a bigger chest again on top of that, mate. Well, what muscle will be, what part of the body will be best to train to help build your chest? That's to everybody.
I asked this earlier on, so you guys should be able to answer it. I spoke about this earlier on.
Yeah, I can relate to what you said earlier, that I know my whole life I loved doing bench and I did back, but, you know, not with the same tenacity. Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I've always kind of seen how you kind of get rolled forwards over time doing that. And but sometimes by building that back and almost, you know, changing your posture.
Makes sense. Yeah, so think about like what Ben would say all the time is like those three things that we always focus on to execute an exercise correctly. And I know your coaches are going to be harping on about this all the time, but it's SSI setup. You need the setup correct, but you need to be stable and then you initiate the muscle. So if you've got no stability in the back, there's no way your body's going to allow that muscle to lengthen there for sure, especially if you're internally rotated like Dan's been saying today. But if there's no stability around that shoulder, you're limiting how much muscle growth you can put on that chest for sure. Like there's so much left in reserve for that. So sometimes you'll see a program from some of the coaches like, I want to build my chest. And why have they given me like one chest exercise or two chest exercises for the whole week? And I got like 15 back at like four back exercises, right? It's because you need to build the back first. right? So there's always that little process of sometimes the program may look a little bit different to what you'd expect, but there's always a pattern and a thought process to why Andrew would program a certain way and Dan would program a certain way and myself and Ben and everybody, right? So we're always looking at those things that's going to maybe set us up better first to build you to get there faster in the end, right? Sometimes it's like it seems slow at first, but it's going to get you there faster if you don't sort of solve that problem in the first place, you know?
It's longevity as well, isn't it? Because as I was saying earlier, kind of the first role of program design that we practice is injury prevention, right? What can we do safe and effective? What can we use to complement SSI? And for me, and understanding that there is no exercise that you do from a training perspective that is going to lead to any sort of progression, regression, sorry. No exercise is bad exercise. So you have to spend a period where you're not working on chest. The reality is you still are going to be working on chest because it's still going to be building kind of if you've only, like I say, I think I've got one chest exercise in with a program that you wrote for me, Gav. That's cool. My chest is still growing week on week. I'm still looking bigger week on week. So kind of I think just understanding the context around it and understanding how training is injury prevention. And I think for a lot of guys, I think it's just taking the ego out of a gym, isn't it? And you guys will all know kind of how you've changed things since you come in and kind of, but your physique's developed massively. And obviously we'll see how massive TK is when he lands in Costa Rica in December. So yeah, it's, I think kind of and one thing I always say to my guys is understanding that there is an explanation behind everything. So if you don't understand, well, why is this in there? Which I'm sure you guys all do is anyway, ask your coach because there's going to be a reason. There's going to be a formula for success. And if you understand it, the likelihood of you being accountable and sticking to it is going to be there. Whereas if you're not and you don't understand it and you're thinking, oh, I want to do more chess, you're naturally going to go in and do a couple of exercises for chess when coach isn't looking, which is going to keep you again more internally rotated, is going to slow down the process overall.
Yep. Nice. Gents, thank you so much for your time today. I know we got over a little bit, so hopefully it's not too long for you. But Dan, thanks so much for your presentation today. I'm sure everybody's learned quite a bit.
Thank
I
you very much.
know
Thank you, Gary.
Thompson has for sure. He's already sent me a message.
Yeah,
He's
that was
enjoyed the presentation, mate.
good.
Fantastic.
Thank you for listening, guys. And if you guys do have any questions, kind of, and you want to filter them through your coaches, or just drop me a message, I'm on the WhatsApp and the Telegram group as well. So if you guys have got any questions, or you guys listening back to this, just fire me a question, and I'll be happy to kind of get it answered if anything wasn't made clear.
Thanks, Dan. And boys,
Cheers.
remember, if you're not yet, just make sure you get start heading over towards the WhatsApp group as well, because we're going to filter that in. I'm sure you've all seen Ben's message. We're going to filter that into different sort of subcategory groups, so it's not just dumping information into one big community. It's like we can have different groups that we can have different chats on, like muscle, nutrition, all these different subcategories we can go into as well. So heading over there if you haven't already. If you need the link, drop it in the Telegram group right now, and Sarah will send you the link again. And hopefully see you all over there, okay?
Take care, guys. Bye-bye.
Take care.